is about the engagement curator, and she couldn't be here tonight. And she just finished her bio for her PhD today. So just for those of you who don't know about Invisible Knowledge, this is the first event of the Invisible Knowledge group. It's a project initiated by Viviana and Emma Wilkins and Tiffany Boyle. And as the name suggests, it's set up to explore ways of making different kinds of knowledge more visible and more accessible, and to find ways of sharing and disseminating formal as well as informal knowledge and experience. It's made up of a group of 20 researchers currently who are exploring various ways of doing this through CCA's programme and in collaboration with other groups. At the moment, Invisible Knowledge has two projects, so one is led by and organised by the Invisible Knowledge participants, and another is led by Glasgow Refugee and Migrant Network, working with CCA and the Invisible Knowledge group to share and produce some new knowledge around the city. So this is the first of the group of the events led by the group, and next week is the first of the events led by Granny, which is at Glasgow Women's Library. And it's called Palestinian Embroidery, Empowering Women and Strengthening Communities. And it's next Tuesday. It's the first of a series of workshops where participants will learn traditional embroidery techniques and symbols focusing on the historical and cultural richness of Palestinian embroidery. So tonight we're really pleased to have Althea Hoonan here. It's a real privilege for us. And I'm just going to hand over to Caroline Gosden, who's organised tonight along with Laura Guy, who will give her own short introduction. And also just to thank Emma and Tiffany, Caroline, Laura and Althea and Viviana for contributing to tonight's event. So thanks very much.
I need to add thanks to Exe for everything done to host us in the conference on CCA. So I also want to thank Tiffany and Emma, so I'm kind of repeating, but Tiffany and Emma invited me onto the Invisible Knowledge Programme, so that's great. And Laura Guy, who is co-organising with me. Basically, the event came about today because I was discussing the experiences I had in archives when I was doing my research with Laura. So my research is on feminist manifestos and contemporary practice, which means I've spent quite a lot of time in archives, and not least the Women's Library at Goldsmiths. So through spending time chasing source materials for practices and feminist manifestos, I began to kind of think of the archive differently, certain archives differently. Their relationship to history and also suppressed cultural narratives, I wondered if it could be possible to think of the archive itself as a kind of feminist manifesto. So after this conversation, we thought about inviting Althea Green to talk about her research into the Women's Slide Library as a way to kind of continue that conversation. So I'm very happy to invite Althea here. Althea Greenham is the curator at the Women's Art Library in the Special Collections, which is held at Goldsmiths University in London. The Women's Art Library was an artist organisation which was collecting and archiving its members' slides and publishing a magazine. And the magazine was published from 1982 to 2002. We have some of the magazines here, so we'll pass those around as well. In 2003, the collection was gifted to Goldsmiths, so that it could remain accessible to the public and support artists' research there and continue to collect and document women artists. So Althea's worked with Women's Art Library since 1990, and throughout this time she's been writing on women's artwork and producing introductory texts, exhibition reviews, catalogue essays, art texts and interviews. So she collaborates with artists on facilitating practice-based research and residencies, curating exhibitions at Goldsmiths, and also taking participating projects, for example, Suzanne Lacey's Silver Action at the Tate and Amelia Beavis Harrison's Costumes for Curators, just two examples. Her articles about information sources on the women artists appear in a number of professional publications produced by the International Organization of Art Libraries, which is also ARLIS for short. Her PhD research is there, so that's with Dr. Lara Perry, and it focuses on the Women's Art Library slide collection as a feminist project. what else can a slide library do the slides represent in our workshop? And then that I'll hand over.
I'm gonna have to read, I'm sorry, because I just need my page and I have a lot of stuff to get through tonight. I want to introduce this talk as a work in progress, to warn that I'm not going to probably lead you to any concise conclusions, but I'm pleased to be here to share some of the provocations I've set myself in order to create new meanings from the Women's Art Library slide collection. This is a quote from Dwight Conkerwood, who from his essay Beyond the Text. I'm concentrating on. I'm not going to do that whole thing where you read off the slide. I'm concentrating on the many practices that are evident in this collection because my 20-year experience with these slides has been primarily a practical one. Slides are functional objects, and as their custodian, I oversaw how they were organized and stored and used. But the functionality of the 35mm slide has changed, and from being an information communication technology to an archival photographic object. And what has emerged for me is how the Women's Art Library slide complicates this shift. This is because it is a collected, politicized photographic object that continues to enact a feminist cultural project. So my question, what does a slide collection do besides represent artwork? Is a pressing one to do with getting away from the artwork. My practice has been focused on extending the slide collection's efficacy on behalf of women artists that I rarely meet. Through their slides, I become a part of their art practice, a collaborator in the consolidation of their work. And when I talk about slides, I'm talking about nearly 20,000 slides. I mean, this is a number that you can't sort of keep in your head or know from one to the next. Through their slides, I become a part of their art practice, and I'm collaborating in the consolidation of their work through routine tasks of conservation and promotion. And they've absorbed me and engendered a sense of responsibility to those many art practices I know the slides embody in absolutely unique ways. And there's me in this costumes for curators collaboration. and that costume was something that was, I worked with an artist who asked curators to collaborate with her in this project where she would come and interview you, sort of get a sense of what your practice as a curator involved, and then design a costume for this function that you had as a curator in your collection. And so obviously I was some kind of sci-fi princess matron I don't even sort of sit on, stand on the floor, I'm hovering. What this costume actually represents is a slide that's fading to pink, which is what happens to them. And there's this accession number on it that has something to do with, I'm really sort of hatching this, actually, something to do with the chemical line of numbering for sperm or something. And what I'm doing is raising out of the patriarchal canon, and I become framed in a slide frame myself, and there I am. Anyway, it was fun. Apart from being measured and getting into it. So the Women's Art Library is no longer a professional membership organization. It's a research collection in an educational setting, responding to the development, or rather keeping up with the demands, of digital scholarship. One of the last tasks I will perform with any single slide as a way of ensuring its future usability slide becomes disembodied to be made available to an expanse of digitally enabled practices. And that's what a slide that's been digitized looks like compared to that other one there. At this point, what happens to the slide is a handmade object asserting the practice of an artist and taking up space. What then happens to the collection as a site of resistance, the feminist project? My work on the future of the slide collection seemed to be drawing each slide away from the slide collection as a coherent body of practices. And when I say coherent, I mean there is a body of knowledge and expression that the slide collection continues to articulate and argue for. My work at the Women's Art Library began when it was an independent organization. And I saw that, this is some PowerPoint viewing software, so I've got to remember to stop it. I saw that this artist organization came to an end with the collection being gifted to Goldsmith. My interest in doing a doctoral research project on the slide collection rose from the experience of seeing it move into an academic library and become a special collection. This happened in 2002, 2003, and this moment coincided with the time that Kodak stopped making slide projectors and the 35mm slide itself became a redundant technology. Now, the Women's Art Library has since become a thriving special collection that grows with the addition of publications and documentation. But the slides have become something different, a finished sub-collection, in other words, an archive to which no further artists will be added. This is not because the feminist project the slides represent has been achieved and the visibility of women's art practices assured, but because slides are a redundant analog technology. But even if we consider this collection outdated, it continues to raise questions around whose art practices achieve long-term visibility, especially in academia. Increasing the public profile of an archive has become a matter of online searchability, creating digital record items, entering as much visual and text data as practical into systems that organize and deliver information to networked communities. Whenever I am standing by the slide collection, the most common question I am asked is, has it been digitized? And this will be me, not in the costume, but in that space with the slide collection. And my answer is to move over to the files, beginning with the artist's whose surname starts with S, and describe the one single project when we try to digitize the collection. This is the website Artwork Life, and I worked with Rosamund Davies, who's lecturer at Greenwich University who taught screenwriting there. So she was very interested in how indexes and hypertext could create narratives in digital spaces. For this project, I scanned 1,200 slides for this website. And at the time, Roz was interested in how a website could index material and enable users to have enriched experiences with digitized archives. Slides were scanned, along with the papers and images of artwork, along with the papers that were sort of also rendered in optical character resolution for hyperlinking, along with names of the artists. Themes were meant to emerge from increasing the content, and users were meant to tag as they browse to generate a unique experience with a section of the slide collection online. Now, this was a pilot project without a plan for technical sustainability, so it became an archive itself after 5 years. And some of it is now stored in the Wayback Machine, and that's the Wayback Machine Earl there. I uploaded as much as I could so that you could still experience the kind of interaction between what happens when you clicked on an image and where it took you. but it's not the website itself, and it can't be added to either. When artists were brought to a... but it had failed before this point of the technical expiry. So even though this website was no longer supported by its host, really it never worked in the first place. And it's the failure of this project that inspires my own research with the side collection. And the failure was sort of highlighted when artists were brought into a focus group to comment on this project. Their main criticism was that the site had curated their work and that it had made their work fit into someone else's vision. And where Roz and, to an extent, I had thought that we were bringing material forward in a way that connected users directly with the joy of the material, the artists rightly saw that it was actually overdetermined in an interface like this. The artists saw that their work was almost misrepresented, and it remains a fascinating, rich project that, despite the meticulousness of the work that went into creating the Art Work Life website, it had messed with the files and how the artists had represented themselves. And those and two things have stayed with me since this project, that one, scanning everything doesn't work, and two, more description or tagging actually doesn't help. The act of digitization suggested a new combination of work and play, rewind and rethinking this slide collection. But for me to do this, I return to the material I work with, and around 4 days a week, with a digital camera. And I started to take walks through sections of the slide collection, photographing what I saw. So this is the first image I made on the slide walk I took on the 11th of May, 2013. And this is the series of slide files that I actually got through in that slide walk. So this is the scale of the collection. I brought a section of it up here. I just about got it on the plane. What I've done before is that had people sitting at tables, but the slide walk starts with Tutsuner. I just go in and I just grab a section, so there's no decision on whose slides to look at or. Slides to look at and how many of each slides to look at. And the reason I'm sort of dragging them all out here is and as you can see, these are these slide files aren't just slides. You know, and there were such things as slide registries, and of course the slide library was, when I talked about the slide being functional, these women artists got together to start up a slide library because they needed slides to teach as much as needed slides to document their own work or be able to speak about their work in a situation with a lot of people. And we wanted to actually show an expansive imagine this multiplied and extended across this table. Well, the table I was referring to, I would say a table, 10 of those tables. And you'd have an idea of the volume of space given over 10 of the tables with the slides like this. So you have. An idea of the volume of space given over to this material that accumulated over a 20-year period directly from women art.
a slide in Puddle, which I took just outside the door of the library in Goldsmiths when they were disposing their section inside there. The space behind my slide collections became contested when slides became a redundant technology. Now, as photographic objects, slides contribute to our analog heritage, and this makes the space that the Women's Art Library collection takes up on behalf of women artists even more important. But rather than historicize this material, I understand this collection more as the product of an artist project, even as an installation. Susan Skingel, and that reads Into Obscurity, exhibiting the slide collection. Susan Skingel was an artist and slide librarian who created this display as a parting glimpse of a major teaching slide collection at the London Metropolitan University. And I'm drawn to making this mass of slide files strange in order to appreciate the eloquent properties of this material. Its mass renders it beyond a total knowing, and I know that I will never experience the totality of what these slides said about women's art. But in accepting this impossibility, I create a different possibility, and that is to approach the slides in a way that reveals what they continue to say. For example, I consider how a collection of artist slides creates a rhetorical space for women's art rather than a catalog of it. I think of a rhetorical space as Lorraine Cohn describes it. It's a textured location where it matters who is speaking and where and why, and where such mattering bears directly upon the possibility of knowledge claims. This box only hints at the extent of new knowledge that artists produce through making slides. Every woman represented in the slide collection identified herself as an artist. She claimed that position when she sent the slides, and the Women Artists Slide Library was an artist's organization, and the file was given over to her as a space in a public arena that was then called the Slide Library, even though it included an array of documentation formats like books, press items, and photographs. Each artist's set of slides established her presence in the collection as a named individual. And so the whole of the collection is organized by the artist's name. The artist file is her designated space to which she could add her slides, and some artists are represented by dozens of slides and others by just one. The slides are not split up or reorganized by themes or chronologies, but they are used, they're returned to the artist's files, and the entire collection is organized alphabetically using the surname of the artist. I can see how the slide collection is a critical space, because I assisted in its operation and saw how the slide collection was a technique for organizing women artists into a political and ethical collective, to borrow a phrase from the sociologist Nuria Mares, who describes how objects and devices enable us to participate in civic social organization, politicizing day to day. The slide collection cohered from the individual decisions made by women to produce slides and be included. The slide was the device they used to engage with feminist cultural politics, but the digital image is how we will engage with these slides in the future. And I'm looking at techniques of digitizing archives in order to retain how the slide collection not only organizes women artists into a collective, but also has the capacity, quote, to inspire, disturb, provoke, and surprise in politically and morally significant ways, to quote from Lord Jim Myers again. I think the valuing art through self-imitation. These slides are primary sources, they remain primary. They're rarely integrated into catalogs, websites, and that constitute a resource of trusted and accepted information. This collection library is self-made. It's set up to confront the parameters of established resources and widen the field of vision, not just with images, but with any evidence of women's art practice short of actual artwork. And so that there's a lot of other stuff in these slide files. Artist statements, listings and kind of publications, there's letters. It's all divided by the sort of practice. The slides constitute an uncatalogued multitude, these individual slides. We certainly can make record of each individual artist, but it's not the same. So far, only the names of the artists have been entered into a catalog because there are just too many slides. What has been collected feels like a fortress rather than a showcase. It is so densely packed with artwork, with production, with dark matter, that it is impenetrable. You like that? Digitizing everything wouldn't make this material more legible, even though it effectively breaks down this dark matter and introduces a kind of visibility. Digitization has its own materiality to explore. And while many artists have created artworks from 35mm slides, it is not this sort of fetishization that preserves a slide collection. And this is this amazing work by Bradley Eros, where he's put this slide into a container of liquid into which a drop of bleach sort of is timed to sort of go into the solution. And as the bleach, as more and more bleach goes into the solution, the color transfers off the transparency of the slide. And it's being projected at the same time, so you've got this sort of psychedelic kind of melting slide being projected. But fetishizing the slide, and I know I go on about the slide, but it's really about the collection and looking at it beyond its sort of particular materiality that I'm interested in. So it's looking how the digital environment actually performs the slide collection. So this is a screenshot of a recording of how Photoshop is batch processes the slides that I took of this batch of slides, this slide collection. And I'm just going to play it as a kind of... I don't think I even want to... Is that the full screen? So this is a video of the images made on 11 May 2013. And they're being batch processed. The session of taking the photographs took about 2 hours. This digital processing takes just over 4 minutes. And although I'm obviously showing this as a projection, this is not a slideshow. This is an algorithmic task being recorded. It's an automated task that constitutes kind of blinding spectatorship. There's no still produced until the end, until it has finished the task or crunched all the numbers. And I videoed this to see what emerges from the slide collection at this pace. How am I engaged or animated by a movement through the collection performed like this? Laura Mulvey has written about how digital spectatorship has given us the ability to pause moving pictures and return to an indexicality of an image, which makes it seemingly more physical. And I think what emerges from the video for me is now how the digital space takes away the traction from the images. And it's no wonder that we're kind of drawn to touch screens to sort of get through to create something from a digital image, which isn't just flashing. But digital imaging rewards with extraordinary detail when it records and extraordinary flexibility when it creates. And what kind of materiality can the digital image reintroduce to the
performance of the slide collection. Are you all being put to sleep by this now?
Stop it.
This is going to be the tricky bit. I mean, this is images in stereo. So this is it. This is. It's not very easy to set this up. And thank you, CCA and Ainsley and Penny, who was here before, to be able to set up slide projectors along with the data projector. To set up a slide projector at all with a remote control, it's amazing. But anyway, so this is one digital iteration of Beth Higgins' slide file, but I think I'm looking for something more in terms of a presence. And this is a beautifully photoshopped, digitally restored slide of the artist Roxanne Hawksley. But the stillness of the slide is really where I'm starting, is my starting point. I mean, I could see that the scans I've made for Artwork Life had left out so much of the material presence of the artist. And of the art, the material presence of the artist that each slide has on its mount. And no matter how detailed an online entry might be, or pristine the scan of the slide's transparency becomes, I found that my messy digital images of slides and their mounts was by far the richer in terms of material information. I was entering into the collection through the threshold of these slides inscribed mounts. So from the very start, I was inspired by Dr. Tim Ingolden, who has written very much about how walks become a different way of researching. And this particular quote has stayed with me ever since about using the difference between if you see a scene, an archaeological dig, and if you can see that a house once existed there, and all that is, remains of it is a couple of sort of lines of stonework around the describing, the slide line describes the area where you're living into a place. But to enter through the doorway of that line, you know, you can just step over any of the holes to get into it. Makes you see or experience that space within it sometimes in a completely different way. So for me to photograph these slides rather than pushing them through a scanner is a completely different way of experiencing the content. So like Beth Higgins' foot, my digital photographs suggest the body that photographs. And they reflect back the artist's acts of improvisation, presentation, and recording. They document a very different space to the one that the slides originally evoked through single projection. But I have to say that, for instance, with this one, which has been reversed and putting it in, you feel like you could almost walk right through into that space, whereas here it's a completely sort of experience. And these are the same slides. And it's extraordinary how much more color comes through the actual projection than the actual me photographing one of my products. So they show up shifting photography, qualities of labeling, mistakes, typos, and see how each is used differently. And all of this is completely out of sight, so that the assumption was when they were producing these slides that you would never see all this other material. And that and what I love about getting close up to these slides is how you see so much more than the artwork, of course, and going back to my big question. And it's as if at last the slide walks have enabled me to listen to the artists and understand the collection through its fabric of place, rather than as a comprehensive catalog. As I move over these slides, taking their photos, I am gathering material from the slide collection that reveals what else it represents. Artwork, and that is inscriptions. To use a term I read in a wonderful article by Teresa Swirsky, I realize now that what my photographs do is invite the noise into qualitative research. I am inviting the noise of these artists at work. Not just producing art, but producing women's art. I feel that now I can see how slides reveal the energy of their making. My digital these are all the same things. My digital photography enacts the original task of photographing the artwork by photographing an artist's slide. And this ad hoc process of digitization puts culture back into motion, as Dwight Conklin described the performance mind. It foregrounds the agency of self-documentation, and it creates a different digitized access to archive knowledge. But as I return to the slides and try to represent them, what am I saying of the feminist project that was the Women's Art Library collection? What can I say with these images that recalls how they are politicized objects, tokens of commitment to the idea of the Women's Art Library? And how does this say how the project has not finished? Whatever these slides said, it's still not enough. The visibility that the Women's Art Library promised is not secure, and even the slide collection cannot be viewed as having said anything definitive about women's art, especially if it doesn't respond to your control. So the slide walks are a way of moving through a material entity created by women artists that is not art. There is a built-in gap between the slide file and the artworks, or the artist, or the studio. And the best an artist hoped for was that this file created a longing to see the real thing. The slide files were made as conduits, something to move past and reach through. And some were seductive, others coolly professional, and others more conversational. But each slide can be seen to be a constructed object of multi-sensory communication that continues to say much more than this woman made an artwork. Technically, the slide walk photographs introduce these complex objects into a projected space. In fact, they reintroduce them since, of course, they were always meant to be projected in the first place. However, I can assure you that they were very rarely viewed in this way. Slides were not routinely projected at the Women's Art Library, and they'd be consulted on a library.
artists adapt the space of the mount to their own language of signs, abbreviations, their own voices of address. The Women's Art Library slide collection is more than the material collected. It's a feminist project about giving voice, conceived by a group of women artists formed a collective in 1978. Slides were a crucial factor to this project because they were the prevalence of information communication for technology for art at the time. So as I create messy photos, I'm refusing the preeminence of the image. It is hugely important that these images of artwork do not represent artwork consistently, which is why I love this one so much, because this is the traction, this messiness, the points of resistance to that which recalls us to how these slides continue to say something about women's art practices. And what makes them professional is not the quality of the transparencies, this one's obviously going a bit orange, but the way they created an artist's slide collection. Whether these artists still have a professional career or ever developed one is an aspect the slide collection no longer represents, but these slide files persist as a self-edited space to connect with audience and readers, and they retain the grain of each artist's scriptural voice, as Crystal Kreider kind of described it. The slide in its entirety shows an artist use the slide as a material space to project their practice, which in turn could be projected between themselves and the public already politicized by entering the space, the Women's Art Library. And so when I come across a slide like this, I'm very much inspired and disturbed, provoked and surprised in politically and morally significant ways, because this slide can no longer be projected. They create oral, audible glimpses, like a door opening to let through the clatter of the library party. So despite my own numerous slide walks, the closest I've ever come to actually experiencing the Women's Art Library slide collection in its entirety was to actually hear it spoken. The artist Claire Gaston undertook a Living with Make Art in the Archive residency. And the result was this work called The River, performed in 2011 at the South London Gallery, where There is no other artwork or digital iteration that expresses the performative power of this collection to continue to say the work of an artist. And this is actually one of the scores that one of the performers worked with is annotated. That is the database of all the names in the Arts Library. It became a kind of Steve Rockian split vision performance. It took an hour, but nobody left. It was kind of durational. Everybody was kind of, because what she done is that the vocalists were set up on the podium, they were sort of standing in bare feet, and they weren't shouting, and so it wasn't a kind of performance where you had to sort of sit there and receive it passively. You were encouraged to sort of just move around, talk if you wanted to, go up to certain ones, if you wanted to hear whose names they were running through. I mean, and it became very interactive. There is a video of it online.
Now, this tactic of naming
is an established feminist art practice enriched by artists such as Hannah O'Shea with her litany for women artists, which performed first in 1976, and there's more information about that. In fact, there is an audio of this work at the React Feminism website. It's a fantastic website to do the early feminist performance work. This is Carla Cruz's poster. It was produced on the occasion of celebrating early feminist collaborative practice, and she named all the way she writes it is WO, parentheses, men, artists. So not a, you don't have to be women to be feminist, artists that she worked with from 2005 to 2012. And of course, as I'm visiting Glasgow Women's Library, looking at that tower, the lift tower, I was immediately struck by all the titles that are sort of listed in this incredible structure. And also Jackie Carey's Women in the City print, which replaces a lot of names of streets with women's names. And these gestures of namings are vital acknowledgments across time and geographies. But the side collection is a project of naming that ensures the possibility of the consistently challenging commentary on publicly accessible art documentation. So this is quite a specific entity. The transition from analog to digital formats will enable this commentary to continue, but as digitization is really a cultural process, this transition needs to work on feminist terms. And for this need, for me, this means ensuring that the noise is not cleared or bypassed or otherwise suppressed in digital environments. The textures of messy digitization foreground the effective labor of self-documentation and challenges the illusory seamlessness of digitization's relationship to the analog photographic archive. As the slide collection merges image and inscription into a single desire to promote the work of the artist, it persists as a feminist space where we can imagine the art world differently. I've gotten to the point in my research now where I'm imagining the slide collection differently without the art. I'm putting a twist on Dwight Conklin's proposition to go beyond the text of the informative image, to focus on the text of titles, names, dimensions, and instructions. I'm testing how text as inscription might perform on behalf of women artists in a feminist collection practice that aims to set up what Gerard Kester would call a sovereign space, or what I call a critical mass. And so I'm introducing a reading, the slide collection, without the artwork, and without what is considered the most important part of the slide, which is the slide mount. For this,
look like a carousel.
Inspired by Gertrude Stein's Tender Buttons, which I was invited to respond to as part of a move for Ops and Maria Walsh's feminist performance dinners that they hold down at Chelsea College of Art. If you're lucky enough to be invited to one of these things, you turn up with some dinner, you sit at a huge round table. Maria Walsh is at the far end of the bell. You've prepared a 5-minute presentation. Could be anything that you mind on the floor. You could be reading a thesis, so abstract or something. But anyway, it is a completely mad kind of event. And I turned up with this with my slide projector, my slide projector. But just to start, just to understand, just in one last quote to talk about titles. There's a John C. Welchman wrote this beautiful book called The Visual History, Invisible Colors, A Visual History of Titles. And he describes how the titles of artworks are performative. And to quote him, both within the confines of the exhibition space, but also, and importantly, as a filament of signification that is always borne away. It's the title circulates equally in the space of memory, publications, reproductions, and popular knowledge. But in the case of the slide collection, I think this is something that still has to happen. So I've loaded up the carousel. If you say your name in order, then I just read out the title. And this becomes a kind of Gertrude Stein experience of Tender Buttons. We're unpacking the box. And it's just through titles and through a rather hoarse voice.
Annette Rowden.
No. Oh, sorry, you start. I memorized it. Sorry. So we're going to go like this. The order that I gave them to you.
Is it just the name?
Yeah. So you're the click, and I'm the projection. So I'm almost like presenting the artwork. You start now.
So not the title of the work, just the name.
Yeah, just the name. Okay. So you're doing the name, and you're doing the Jackie Perry. We're naming these women in the CCA club room.
Okay. So Marlene Hannah.
View from this side, Mary arise.
Annette Rowden.
For Star of India, black marble.
Annette Rowden.
Meditation.
Jane Lindsay.
Note for top.
Maurice Botello.
Showing Diavola his enchanted 1889.
Lydia Clark.
To be touched and worn by the viewer.
Lemnos.
Wall hanging in flax, fleece, plus rags.
Kimberly Gundel.
Swirling pink charcoal.
Kimberly Gundel.
The sage of all faiths.
Lee Smith.
Rumba Oils, March 88.
Ellen Cohen.
Examined woman 27 times. 40. Painting felt figures.
Wendy Sullivan.
Red dot the room oil.
Andrea Bailey.
Orange dot for dry point veal.
Doris Lumba.
Stealing public spaces fails.
Wendy Sullivan.
Connections with color in ink.
I
just wondered if you could talk a bit more about what you feel like these kinds of tags and metadata, the way it means that, like, what metadata means to the digital world, like what you feel like, do you feel like there are essential losses or gains, and just talk about that. Maybe, like, I just want to know what you think kind of about.
I'm really aware of words' relationship to describing artwork, I suppose, because what I've experienced is the culture shock of working with an arts organization and using volunteers to create a database describing artists' books, actually. It's not only the artists, but the artists describe themselves. But we also got a lot of books donated or reviewed to the magazine or material. So we were creating records, and I would sit a volunteer down and say, and we didn't. I had no concept of things like library thesaurus, you know, like controlled words. You know, it wasn't really about making them searchable in that sense. It was just, A, you have a volunteer who's willing to do this work, so you just want to try to keep it interesting. B, there's nothing wrong, I felt, with a record being made that had a personal stamp with somebody as well. And C, if you say to somebody stream of consciousness and you know they're a practitioner, they're going to describe this artist's book in a way that it's going to be interesting, whatever, you know, even if it isn't in a kind of way that would be downloaded by another library. It's not a transferable kind of catalog entry thing. So this whole thing about generating text, and of course that is the way that everything's networked. I mean, you have this dream that things could be you can do image searches by looking up stuff that's kind of orange or...
Well, Google's trying to do that right
now. Yeah,
so all that kind of
stuff. Yeah, but it's really rough, and I'm still not sure that's going to turn up anything particularly interesting. So I think that's a really key question, but what happens with that, with the failed website, and it failed, yeah, I was kind of disappointed because I think probably the key thing was that we were working with a designer who didn't get it, because the whole reason why we tried to, it had that aesthetic, it had this very distinct kind of look, was that she was trying to emulate the browsing, you know, just the kind of, yeah, all that kind of thing, that stuff being handwritten and things. But the searching, the back end, the development of the site didn't have, what couldn't replicate that serendipity in the same way, or that kind of browsing. So it was going to rely on people tagging a lot and getting very involved. And believe all those, the National Archives has got a page called Discovery, which, this is the National Archives in Kew, because I revisited this whole problem of why don't people tag, or why don't they work, or what's, you know, why is it so clunky? And they've got a page on their site called Discovery, which is inviting members of the public to describe aspects of pirates and death and stuff. I don't know, describe things in order to try to get them to interact with the digital archive online. And if people start to use the same words, it doesn't seem to open up possibilities.
Well, I thought it was interesting too, because there's, like, I think something like 3 or 4 new programs in that are like sort of offshoots of MFA programs in the States that are just for building large information systems, like for building the structures to maintain large information systems, like essentially how to build a lot of an archive before the content comes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a lot of the ways that our kind of vitality is being like measured through like metadata, like say Google or something. Like being a member of a closed Facebook group, you're generating all this content, but then you're also sort of giving up the content of yourself as data to a system that already sorts you out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that process in reverse is really interesting with your kind of, like, what you were trying to do with something in reverse, which is to take a very cacophonous, like you said, like voices of many, many kinds of people who don't necessarily fit into any hierarchies, and then organize them into a kind of large system, and that's really interesting for me. And I guess what I meant by noise and texture is kind of that, like how what you're feeling, or like if you could talk more about the feeling or something of the noise, because like this is really interesting because it's this kind of like see a loss or a gain in that, like in that organization or something, and like doing it from the front or from the back, like in of taking the noise of physically generated, like people chose to be in this archive,
mm-hmm.
people wanted to be like represented like this, versus like the kind of thing of like you plugging in your profile,
yeah,
your
yeah.
information. It's like such a different, it's such a different thing, like turning a natural, like a kind of not natural but a civic like center, like this sort of archive, into a digital thing, versus
mm-hmm.
like everyone sort of like just prescribes themselves, or like I mean, I don't know. So I'm just thinking a lot about like this how algorithms function to make you kind of like, I don't know, like that, like you get suggested what to buy now on
mm-hmm.
eBay or something like that,
mm-hmm.
like versus the difference
you
between
become a predictive text.
You become a predictive text, exactly. So like that kind of, this kind of like these archives are so closed right now because we're doing it the other way around or something,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like this is a real moment where that is starting and where other
that's
sounds of
quite sure.
Yeah.
It's just really, I don't know, it's interesting that you're
well, I'm questioning it, and well, and, I mean, and partly it is this feeling, it was so well coming across that artwork that actually does this bleaching process. Because years before I started, came across that artwork, I initiated thinking about the slide collection. Because the rest of the collection is very well consulted. The slide collection is quite dormant when it's obviously meant to be projected on, you know, coming into the light. But I did feel that there was this risk that the digitized, whatever digitization happens to it, will kind of bleach it, would kind of rob it. And I have seen there are other amazing slide collections, political slide collections, especially my main example is the Afro-Asian Visual Arts Archive, which has successfully been transferred to the VADS website, the Visual Arts Data Service website. And it's got lots of metadata, it's got the scan of the slide, well, the image. It's very informative, but I just don't feel it. There's something, and it could be, you know, I've tried to spend time with it. And I'm trying not to be sentimental about slide files and stuff as well. But it's very, I think the most, I've got, we've just awarded the Living with Make Art in the Archive Bursary this year, and it does involve a collaboration between a computing artist called Kiona Mayhouse and an MFA curator student called Brenda Yaman, and they have proposed to look for algorithms in the collection, actually. So this is, and the title of the bursary call was Kill the Archivist, which was my suggestion. I'd like to know what happens when there isn't this, you know, interest, this intrinsic knowledge. And yeah. But algorithms is, yeah. I don't know, but most I could do at this point is maybe provide a provocation and look for good examples. And I think one of the really good examples is sound archives, and where there's some kind of crowdsourcing. Something like the Manchester District Music, the MDMA site, because it's just got lots of archive material, and but it's a hell of a lot of work on a couple of people dedicated time as well. So I'm rambling.
This topic is the Library of Congress also. Like the Library of Congress in America is like, it suffers every year probably a failed attempt at digitizing things.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They were trying to digitize all the wax records from the early teens and turn them into digital records and destroy
the listserv of public libraries, and it was something about Parliament will no longer create hard copies of certain kind of documents.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody picked up on the fact that, yeah, and that we should all rely on gov.uk for seeing the latest, I don't know, integrations of that. I'm not really sure. And you know, a sharp librarian saying, look, if you look at it now, it's missing 38 documents. I mean, you cannot, and so that libraries really need to have these hard copies to be made available to the public, because it's not going to happen through websites now. Yeah, the seamlessness of digitization is not hard. I mean, it's not.
Yeah. And didn't I just send like a container full of documents about genocides and colonial times or something, like offshore in Britain?
Oh,
this kind of was a physical document.
Yeah, he's a stayer was written. These holding places for art as well. Yeah. I didn't argue at all. But I also love Vito Stero's essay on the poor image and the JPEG that gets kind of worn out. License to do, I'm fooling around really. I mean, it felt insane starting to take these awful photographs, to be honest, because so much of your custodianship is accuracy rituals. But I suppose that I was also involved with publishing the magazine, so I knew the whole thing about typos and slippage and getting people's names wrong and all that kind of stuff was part and parcel of the experience of working with this material. But I wanted to do something that made me feel, look at this in a completely different way, and it was quite a physical thing. It was like grabbing this ridiculous amount of slides, going in at the weekends. No, it was so not about work, it was in the workspace, but it was kind of undermining the workspace because I was there doing this mad thing of getting the camera and just going click, click, click. But and really sadly in a way, seeing them for the first time. And that's really not about saying, oh, they're wonderful, this one. It's really like, Christ, I didn't know we had this. You just don't, it's a moment of seeing. It's really not a moment of preservation. And so what I'm recording these photos that have no pretense that they're really good, and they're all kind of brown and strange anyway because the lighting is so awful. But it's really about the scene, so it's really about a still moment of seeing for the first time. So it is, and I've resisted the idea of doing a video because it's not about sort of scooping them up. It's really about being arrested by each one. I think that's really kind of important. And I did have a dream that I would do every single one. I thought, oh, this is quick. I could do this. I could get through it. But know, your math goat starts to go after a while. And you know, that took 2 hours. And I also, I don't know. So that there's also this sense of retaining the feel of the unknown without it being that awful black hole feeling of digital knowledge or big data. And even though I've looked at sort of visualizations of big data as a kind of way of thinking about this collection, I'm not sure I want to make it pretty. You know, like, I don't want to make it into sort of a consumable like that. Yeah, any ideas would be greatly appreciated.
I'm sorry for thinking out loud, so excuse me, I was just thinking about the kind of site of value, the way that with a slide, or the kind of traditions of documentation is to preserve and to be able to represent something, but I was struck by the kind of gesture of the slide walk as a way to kind of move away from that objectification of the original work. It's just kind of what we can say that a work is ephemeral and fleeting, and it isn't forever. And actually then you transfer away from representing or kind of retelling the work. You're actually then saying that your journey through the work is then the kind of transfer on of the work, the kind of legacy or the lifespan after the kind of physical work's gone. So I think I was just, in terms of feminist kind of discourses, that was really interesting, that kind of move away from objectification and ownership, and claiming
nice.
Ownership.
Yeah,
something that you were deliberately not claiming ownership of something,
absolutely.
It became another thing.
Thank you for that. No, I can't remember. No, that's absolutely true. I think this is why I switched my title, because I had this dream of doing something digitally innovative, like I have no technical career. You know, I don't have a technical partner. I wish I did, because there was. At one point, I did meet some guy who had created a way of digitally loading up a piece of paper, a real paper that he played on. It's called a chronotape, and he would create family timelines, and you could load the information onto a piece of paper and put it on two wooden reels. He had this little wooden box, and it was all about creating a kind of analog interface with the store rich information thing that anyway, yeah, it's called the chronotape. Please feel free to email if you want to know more of it. The guy's called Paul Bennett. But anyway, so at first I thought there could be a space for some kind of new gadget that would represent or you make the slides become digital material without losing materiality, or doesn't really kind of, because what Paul talked about with these funny papered reels was that you could come across them in an attic, because of course paper is a far better way to preserve anything than any digital kind of CDs or USBs or anything like that. And the paper was always going to retain its body integrity. But it's moved into, I think, what I'm looking for is the challenge, or think of digitization, rethink digitization as a feminist kind of project, and it's absolutely about not having ownership, because again, my experience with the magazine and working with this as part of our arts organization, women's art organization, full of egos and passion and sense of ownership was pretty poisonous, actually. It's not what we need. But yes,
these metaphors of a projector and a slide, and
it's
a sort of working to be enabled through another channel. It's really interesting.
Thank you. Yeah, but yeah, it's there. I'm just really lucky. But the whole, what also made PhD interesting to other people, because of that, you know, Brighton, Lara Perry is a feminist. The rest of, you know, it's but for them to accept it as a PhD project, it's really looking at how all slide collections, what was lost, and, you know, across a lot of teaching. So that I have written in correspondence with a with side librarians who've seen collections, well, you know, as I have, you know, literally end up as landfill, and what exactly is kind of lost. So I loved Susan Stengel, who was an artist herself, you know, the way she repackaged this stuff. That was the next step, was that it was getting thrown away, but first seeing it in a different light. As an art installation, in the lobby of the library.
And I guess in relation to, like, particularly that sort of issue of datedness that's inscribed in both the slide collection and then also so many feminist practices, so many sort of art practices that are made in such sort of proximity to the material conditions that surround them, that they often, this sort of issue of datedness becomes really perceptible around them. And just thinking about how the cartography disturbs the idea of chronology. So as a method for thinking about the way in which we also approach other slide collections, it seems really important because it disrupts that sort of linear mapping that does place things as sort of in the past or sort of dated.
Yeah.
In some way.
Yeah. I mean, at one point, somebody who had worked in a slide registry for South Arts Council Southeast or something like that would come in and say, how do you find anything in these files? Why don't you sort of put it by year or something? Have you tried that? And it would just have been, no is the answer. But it's interesting. And I wasn't in charge of them at the time. But I think the thing about, you know, devising this idea of the slide walk, which also felt a bit cringy and such a pun, and you know, I don't know, I'm just really lucky that they accepted this idea as something with legs, is to look at it. I always did feel that this collection was like this some urban landscape, you know, that these were, that. Yeah, and it's so lovely to see this Jackie Perry map there, because I don't know, yeah, it's sort of the grid, the patterning, there's so much about it that it is a terrain.
These are a few of the references that I made.
Practitioners here who've ever sort of have, I mean, the thing about these is that they are like analog websites. That's how I describe it. Because there are the slides, there's the articles, there's CDs, you know, it does become kind of your precursor to a website, or like maybe websites that follow this kind of
documentation. I make work with Xerox. Really funny. Like, I make most of my parts for the last 10 years is use Xerox, and it's really, because it started kind of when I was also like a young art maker, and there was this sense of like the flyer and the pamphlet, the zine, and this like urgency to it, like that it was about distributing information quickly and like mass information or something,
mm-hmm.
and then like MySpace and the internet and like all this like everything now, and like when I show people work now, like, the first word most people say is nostalgic. It's kind of the material qualifies a slow read now or something. It like it really like people read it a lot slower. People read it almost like painting,
mm-hmm.
whereas it used to just be like about contrast and receiving like an image in a one liner. Almost it's like now it's a lot slower.
Mm-hmm.
The read of it is a lot slower. It communicates a lot slower. Yeah,
I was really interested by. There's somebody who teaches at Goldsmith, she's a musician called Lisa Busby, and she's got this wonderful collection of different formats of music. She's part of this music scene. Her collection is called Editions